Look, math has never been my thing, but admission to Kings Island, plus parking, plus all-day drinks, adds up to a lot more than $49.99 to me, which is why the fun plus some sale at Kings Island is such an amazing value, not to mention a day's worth of priceless memories. Go ahead, crunch the numbers yourself. During the fun plus some sale at Kings Island, you'll be getting way more than what you pay for. So why wait? Get all the fun and then some, only at visitkingsisland.com.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
If your small business is booming and ready to expand, you might say something like,
"It's happening!
Booyah!
Yeah! Crushed it."
But if you need someone who can actually help protect your growing business, just say,
"Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there."
And just like that, your State Farm agent can help you get the coverage you need for your new space. For your small business insurance needs, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey there, I'm Brad. I'm about to win the Tuesday Night Bowling League Championship. I'm also a highway worker for the Ohio Department of Transportation. When you move over and slow down, you're making sure I can bowl the winning strike with my buddies.
Remember, they're not just roadside workers. Thank you for moving over and slowing down.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer, then no time left for a jog.
When everyone else is relying on you, it's easy to put your needs last. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's the first part of your big World Cup preview coming at you in two separate sections. We're going to walk through every single group of the World Cup that starts on Sunday and give you the lowdown on everything you need to know about each of these 32 teams. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me is the Rank God, Mr. Sam Tai. How are you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Oh, we are 5 days out, 4 days out, 3 days out. No matter, it depends when you listen to this, but it's feeling a bit strange, isn't it? I think I look outside, I see the cold weather, and I think, nah, this isn't the build-up to a World Cup.
Yeah.
This isn't right. Usually it's about 19 degrees in England by now, and right now we're dropping. This is weird. It's wet. It's wintry. It's cold.
We've all got the lights on in our respective houses.
Yeah, the heating's on. It's a strange time for English people
the
here.
The heating's and not lots on here. I can't afford that kind of thing.
Yeah, we've had to put it on, I'm afraid. Bedroom's consistently 16 degrees when I go to it. It's terrible times.
Yeah, no, it's not your average World Cup for a plethora of reasons, but we're going to just talk through each group nonetheless. And of course, join us as well as our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Oh, I'm excited, mate. You know, it's only a few weeks now till football comes home, and like we've been waiting for this moment for a long time.
I thought you were going to be like, it's only a few weeks until the Premier League is back. Like,
nah, no, yeah. I'm bang up for this, mate.
He's sat in his England shirt.
I've sat in my England shirt. I'm watching the England YouTube channel. The lads all set off to Qatar today. They're going on a plane called Rainbow. Love that. Love that. Let's make those Qataris uncomfortable and let's hammer home a few messages along the way during this World Cup. Obviously, this tournament probably shouldn't be there, but it is. It's going to happen. So now people have got to make a stand as they go through. They're going to wear armbands throughout the tournament, rainbow armbands. They'll get fined for it. They don't care. Whatever happens along the way, people are going to make some statements, and I'm sure there'll be loads of storylines unfolding during this tournament. But one of them will also be that England are finally World Cup winners again, and that's the one that I'm most excited about.
Honestly, the raging overconfidence is always the thing that makes me happiest. But it is one of those things, and you're right. And there are going to be statements throughout this tournament. And FIFA coming out last week and being like, can we focus on the football, please? Is the equivalent of someone being like, so the only comparison I can use here is like, imagine if you're in church and someone's like, you can't laugh during the sermon and your friend's making funny faces at you. It's like, as soon as you said that, it's like, well, obviously it's going to happen now, isn't it? Like, what a ridiculous statement to make.
People are allowed to do whatever they want. That's kind of how life works. So sorry, yep. FIFA. You don't control us. You've tried. You've really, really tried. But it's not going to work.
Right. Well, we've got a lot to get through. So let's rattle into this and let's start with Group A. Each group, I think what we're going to do is we're going to take the highest ranked team and work our way through the group and see kind of where we fall. So Group A is obviously the Netherlands, Senegal, Qatar and Ecuador. And we'll start with the Netherlands. So DJ, over to you.
Yeah, massive tournament for the Netherlands. They're back. They were missing from the last one. And it's nice to see them back. This is a proper football nation, inspired by Total Football, of course, and all the years gone by and Johan Cruyff and all the rest of it. And they're back and they're ready to, well, they hope, make a statement. They've got a decent squad. Very decent squad. Let's see whether Louis van Gaal can do this. He's 71 years old now. He's got some pretty serious health problems too. He says that this squad is going to energize him. What we do know is he's going to not take any prisoners. He'll do whatever he wants. Like, this is not a man that is about to bow to any like player pressure, any fan pressure, whatever. He doesn't care anymore. He's 71. He's been in the game a long time. He's not feeling that great. He's going to be doing whatever he wants. Look, Netherlands will be in like a 3-4-1-2. That's how Van Gaal explained the system that they play. Most people, when they dress it up, they put it down as a 5-3-2. But Van Gaal doesn't see it that way.
Yeah, I don't think that's accurate at all. I think it's a 3-4-1-2. Louis spot on.
It's a very it's a very tilty back five, isn't
Every guide you look at says 5-3-2 at the moment. So just bear that in mind when you are looking at your previews of how this tournament is going to shape up. Players to look out for. I mean, look, they've got a lot. We know most of them. Cody Gakpo is someone that we have talked about, obviously, on this podcast quite a lot for quite a long time now. And he's one of those that you've got to be excited about at a World Cup, because it's all about form and you want to see players like just feeling like they are ready for this stage and they're ready to make a name for themselves on an even bigger platform. And look, let's face it, Gakpo is a good World Cup. He probably makes a massive transfer in January. That is the reality of it. I know PSV are having a good season and he's a massive reason for that. He's actually quite new at international level. He's only played 9 games for Netherlands, but he's pretty special now.
He's got huge breakout energy, hasn't he, Dean? He's probably the biggest breakout energy in the whole tournament, I would argue.
Like, I think that's it,
Yeah, most likely to make a 50 million euro transfer after the World Cup, Cody Gakpo.
Exactly, and it's a funny one because like a lot of people in... you know, like football, have probably heard of him by now, but I bet not many people would I be able to identify him in a lineup. He's one of those. Like, you've heard of him, but you don't really know what he's like as a footballer. You have probably no idea what he actually looks like. And over the course of the next few weeks, I think you definitely will recognise Cody Gakpo by the time this tournament is over. But the man that still... going to be looking at for goals is probably Memphis, which feels weird because he doesn't really play football in the rest of the season. A thigh injury is held him back a bit this year. But obviously Barcelona have moved away from him being central to their striking plans. But, you know, he's good on the international stage. He's got 42 international goals. He's got, well, he's a great footballer, isn't he? And technically, like, he really fits into the model of how this team is built. I'm quite excited about seeing this team because I think that the ceiling could be almost whatever they want it to be. Like, they could crash and burn. They could, because like they haven't been in a tournament for a while. They're new to it. Van Gaal, I honestly don't know what we're going to get from him and what's going to happen. I'm sure there'll be a couple of weird things that happen within that squad. But we could definitely imagine this team makes the semi-final. Like, they could. And if you're in the semi-final, it means you could get to the final, obviously. It looks like the big test will come. I think Argentina in the quarterfinal is how it like pans out on the paper. It never happens, right? Like that, you can plan these tournaments as much as you like and try and figure out who the final is going to be. It never works out that way, so it's kind of pointless exercise. But Van Gaal has made it to the final stages before as manager of this team. In 2014, they came third, and they've got a good experience here in Netherlands of experienced players and also players that are making their breakthrough and are new to this stage, and they are definitely looking to make a statement.
The big difference, I think, for the Dutch, people are pointing out on paper at least, if between like this team and the 2014 guys. 2014 team, actually, like, it was weird. It was weird. I don't know how many people remember this, but like, for some reason, Ron Vlaar was possessed by the spirit of Jaap Stam and just like went absolutely nuts. And Stefan de Vrij and Bruno Martins indeed did as well. Daryl Janmaat was in that team. He got a move to Newcastle. They actually weren't a great team, really, on paper. But what they did have was Arjen Robben and Wesley Sneijder. And they had two like elite footballers in the attacking trident. And they had Robin van Persie, said three. They don't have really that on paper right now. And that's what people are pointing to.
Are you saying that
Wout
Weghorst is not an elite attacker? Is that what you're getting at?
I might be suggesting that Wout Weghorst is not on the level of Robin van Persie.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bold statement.
But on paper, they are probably short in that area compared to last time. But people need to remember that Memphis takes on this like different form when he plays for the Netherlands. He's like all of the South Americans who just up it several levels when they play for their nation. It's really interesting to see a European player have that trait. He just goes up a notch. And also this team built from the back, you know, with Virgil van Dijk and, you know, marshalling a back three, which is really strong. Like, and Frenkie in the middle, like, this is a better overall team than 2014. It might lack the strike force on paper, but Memphis and Cody Gakpo are serious. Bergwijn is a seriously good footballer, and they're built through really nicely. I see semi-final hype, and I struggle to disagree with it. I see people saying dark horse. I don't know if they qualify for a dark horse, but if they do, then yeah, they're an obvious pick.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'm with Dean on if they come up against Argentina, then that's going to be very, very interesting. But just the way that this tilts, the way that Denzel Dumfries gets forward, and they play with Bergwijn tending to drift over to that right-hand side, which means that sometimes Dumfries inverts and goes inside and basically plays as a second nine. We've talked about that before with him at Inter. But he loves to get in the box. He thinks he's a forward, yeah. But they will do that, and Daley Blind will tilt a little bit backwards to make it a back four when they're going forward. Frenkie can drop in there, pick up and carry in transition. It's a really nice side. They're really well balanced. And there's a lot of depth in these midfield areas, right? There might not be it up front, but there's a lot of depth in these midfield areas with Frenkie de Jong, Cope Miners, Martin de Roon, David Klaassen is still very much an integral part of this side. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Netherlands line up and make things happen. But with that, I think it's probably time to roll on to the middle two teams, you would say, on paper, Sam, with Ecuador and Senegal.
Yeah, I think two teams that, on paper at least, feel like they're kind of vying for that second best team in the group spot. And we'll get to Qatar shortly, who feel like a real unknown here. But the Dutch are clearly the strongest team in this group, and Ecuador and Senegal are both probably looking at this and thinking, this is a group we can qualify from. You've got two teams here who will feel pretty strongly that they can get into second place here. Now, Senegal obviously have had the tragic news recently that Sadio Mane has picked up an injury. and he's still going, but we don't really know how fit he's going to be. And it's what it's done is it's washed away a lot of the really well-placed optimism around this team that they could maybe go on and achieve something really special here. Like, African nations have never won the World Cup. I think the furthest they've ever got is a quarterfinal berth. And this Senegal team felt like they had the potential to get to that point and then see what happens, because they've just been crowned as African champions, Senegal, for the first time in their history. They're riding this absolute wave of optimism. And Sadio Mane then picks up an injury in the penultimate game of Bayern Munich's sort of half term. So now they have to kind of just readjust a little bit. They just have to reassess exactly where they are, and they have to try and get through this group without Sadio Mane, probably. And then maybe they can welcome him back in for game four if they get to it. Now, that would be amazing, but they have to do the hard yards without him, which is not what you want because he's so talismanic. But they are a good team. Like, they've built solidly through the middle. You know, Idrissa Gueye, Kalidou Koulibaly. Like, they're a good team. And they have a system, and they'll be reactive regardless. They just need to get much more out of Boulay Diarra up front. They need to get more out of Ismaïla Sarr on the right-hand side, and they'll be okay. And Ecuador, I mean, Ecuador have some pretty sharp players too. The way they burst into space, the way that they can counter-attack and burst forward. And Gonzalo Plata, you've got Pervis Estupiñan. They're a good team too, and they're really solidly built through the middle. Moises Caicedo might just get his big breakout here as well on the world stage. No disrespect to Brighton and Hove Albion there. So two interesting teams here. Two teams I think are good enough to finish second in a World Cup group. But obviously only one of them can. And actually, Dean, it might be that neither of them do, because we have a bit of a surprise package here.
Yeah, so I love this group. I love this group. And just looking at the opening fixtures of it too. So obviously, yeah, opening night, right? Qatar v Ecuador, and then on the Monday, it'll be Senegal v Netherlands. Like, Qatar-Ecuador, I've heard too many people saying, not going to watch that. Yes, you are. You are going to watch this game. And look, I can't say for sure that Qatar are going to surprise us all, but they might. And I find that quite interesting, because just through the bit of research that I've done on this team, they've got a togetherness and an understanding of each other and a style of play that means they probably have an edge that other teams, and certainly other fans, probably aren't expecting to have. Around half the squad play for the same club team, El Sadd. They all play there. There's like 11 of them, 12. The same club team. Absolute madness.
And the rest of them all play for Al Dahail, the other one.
The others are pretty much the same team. They've like had a long break for the World Cup. They've been playing and training together for a while.
Yeah, they suspended the league.
Yeah,
on the 14th of September, that was when the league stopped for the World Cup break, and everyone's been in since doing national
two
team
months.
Stuff. That's a long time.
Are they still
been
friends?
Playing little friendlies?
I just like, spent 2 months of you two. I'd be sick of you.
Yeah, true. But yes, I was going to say too. Like at Al Sadd, don't forget they were coached by Xavi, and they've been taught a passing style. They're a very well-connected team. They understand their roles. They're a good side. And I was looking at it too, and they scored. They played in the 29 Asian Cup. They basically have done like a global tour over the past 12 years. Like, preparing for this tournament has like taken a lot of work, because like they basically weren't a team 12 years ago when they got this tournament. And they've had to set themselves up to become competitive. So they've played in all sorts of stuff. I mean, they even played in Copa America at one point. But at the Asian Cup in 2019 and in the Gold Cup in 2021, they were the top scorers, and they've got a couple of players that it's worth looking out for. I don't know that I'm going to do the pronunciation of their names any justice, but I apologise to the lads. But Almoez Ali and Akram Afif.
I like Afif the most because his name is FIFA backwards.
It is.
Deep conspiracy
there, for sure.
Tin hats on, lads. Tin hats on.
But yeah, those two are a proper partnership that they'll be excited about, and they need to deliver if they're going to do anything at this tournament. But I've just got a feeling in that first game that they might actually pull something off. And if they do, they've got a great chance of getting through to the knockouts.
Yeah, all you need to do is win one game in the group.
You have to win one game, and you've got a pretty good chance. So I don't know if they can actually do that, but the ambition really is for them to just win a game at this World Cup. Like, that's an unbelievable achievement for Qatar. So, yeah, look, it's a weird one because we're all preparing to watch a team that, let's be honest, we've never watched before. Like, you can't really even... I was trying to watch some of their games in the build-up to the tournament. You can't find streams of their stuff. They're like, even on Reddit, you can't find a lot. You can find a few highlights here and there, but in terms of watching the full games, it's been very, very hard. They've played all sorts of friendlies. They've played, like, Udinese at one point. They've played Croatia's under-23 team. They lost to them. They've played Mallorca. They've played a load of random international teams, as I say. It's a weird one, but just be prepared that they might not be as bad as you think. They might be all right.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. When you have a team that are drilled and they know exactly what they're going to do, Qatar, there's not going to be surprises as how Qatar try to play here. They're going to try and dominate the ball. They're going to try and knock it around the back. And eventually they'll try and get it to the front two and they'll expect them to be the players that do things. I mean, Hassan Al-Haidos will get a little bit higher up. He plays in the midfield three, but he is one of those players that can play wide. He can play up front and has done at times. He's the one that will get up there to support them. And Anwar Ezzali, as you say, is the player who will stay kind of central and occupy centre-backs whilst Afif will kind of drift around and kind of allow this team to build up through him, which makes it interesting, I think. But yeah, I'm with you. I've got a funny feeling Qatar get out of this group. And I think this is the where we're looking at here is a team that if they can get an opening day win, they're right in the mixer because they know exactly how to play with each other. There's no question marks about how they're going to line up. There's no question marks about how they're going to play. This is a team very, very well drilled in home conditions and home climates who will, and as you say about the two teams that everybody plays for in the squad, who are well used to playing with each other. I just think that these intangibles, if you will, don't sometimes go under the radar in World Cups. And effectively, that ability to just know each other's game and know the game plan, I think might well counter the fact that on paper they're a worse team than some of the others.
I'm going Netherlands and Senegal.
I mean, that's the safe bet.
That's the safe bet, but it's probably the logical one.
Yeah.
I understand. I think Qatar have got an opportunity, like I said, but I still got to say Senegal.
Yeah. Okay, Sam?
I didn't know we had to do predictions.
Yeah.
We're sticking them in.
No,
yeah, ranking the teams. We're ranking the teams. It's called Ranks FC.
Oh, man.
You only got to pick Netherlands and Senegal, Ecuador or Qatar.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Netherlands to win the group. And as much as I actually really want it to be Ecuador, I'm also going to stick with Dean and say it's going to be Senegal.
I'm going to go Netherlands, Qatar, yeah. That's my first prediction. Are you missing out on games you'd want to watch because they're not broadcast in your region? Well, let me introduce NordVPN. If you're in the UK, but you'd rather listen to commentary from our old pal Derek Ray, why not give something new a go? Using NordVPN and a click of a button, you can do just that. And the same goes for our US listeners who are desperate for those dulcet tones of Peter Drury or Martin Tyler. There's no need to travel to Japan if you want to watch the J-League or Austria to keep an eye on the latest youngsters flying off the RB Salzburg pipeline when NordVPN brings it right to you. With 5,000 plus server options, no game is out of your reach. Using our link nordvpn.com/ranksfc, you can try it for a free month. And also, there's a huge discount on their two-year plan.
Walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer, then no time left for a jog.
When everyone else is relying on you, it's easy to put your needs last. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.
On to Group B, shall we? And let's start with England. We've heard how Dean feels about England. This group is obviously England, USA, Wales, and Iran. We've heard how Dean feels about England's chances, Sam. How do you?
I'm deeply concerned, paralyzed with fear almost on this one. I'm struggling with the idea that we can really, really hang with the big guns. I don't think our group is particularly strong. Like, I don't, I don't,
I'm not strongest really worried group about on paper. All four teams in FIFA's top 20 of the rankings.
I'm not worried about the opponents in the group stage. But I don't think we can really. We'd need another one of those. We need a third tournament in a row where we somehow avoid all of the big guns all the way through, which is our speciality. Obviously, it happened in 2018 and again in the Euros to an extent. I'd be deeply concerned about this team coming up against some of the absolute best. So I'm kind of keeping a lid on my optimism here for England. But in terms of the group, like it's like playing Wales is always a great occasion. Playing the USA is particularly fun for the Ranks SC podcast. Iran are in it as well. Don't really care about that one too much. But I think we're shy of the best, not just in terms of, you know, the quality and the confidence, but also just like the form. You know, we've got a couple of players here that we're heading into this World Cup, and I'm thinking, yeah, you could do the business. But we've got a couple who I'm like just petrified of. Like, you know, we can't escape the fact that Harry Maguire is in absolutely dreadful form. We can't escape the fact that, you know, guys like John Stones and Calvin Phillips have had injuries recently. We're missing Reece James. Harry Kane has looked quite tired recently. When does he not look quite tired recently? I'm a bit worried. I'm a bit worried that we're not going to live up to our potential and our potentially our expectation, because even my wife is walking around saying, well, semi-finals in 2018, finalist in 2021, natural progression, we're going to win. I know she's joking, but I need to tell her every time to stop. Because the more she says that in front of people, the more people will say it. I think it's healthy to lower our expectations a little bit, but I don't look at England right now. I really don't. And Jack, you'll absolutely agree with me. I don't look at England right now and see a team that can hang with Argentina and Brazil and some of the absolute best. I just don't see it. But I do see a team that can finish top of this group without too much of a problem.
I also don't see a team that are particularly fun to watch or... No. Good in many ways.
We're good at winning games.
You're good at winning games, though, and that's exactly what I would say in England's defense for that, is that England don't necessarily have to be all that good, right? They score goals from set pieces, or did mostly at the last World Cup. This is a side that know what they're doing in those areas. They're good at taking leads and then trying to hang on to them. Now, that hasn't been the best way of working against your Croatias or your Italys in the last couple of tournaments, but it doesn't take much for England to shithouse their way through games, is basically what I'm getting at here. And I think there is an element of watching England where you're like, they could just win every game 1-0. And that's how it could pan out. And so I think there is some part of me that looks at this and goes, could England be in the mixer here for how this pans out? And could England be in the mixer at the sharp end of this tournament? Yeah, of course they could. And ultimately, when you're looking at this, would that be good for football as a whole? I think the answer is no.
Yeah, it'd be great.
I've got a real theories about this, and we'll come on to it a little bit later on. But the team that wins a World Cup, I think, influences the style of football around the world for a long, long time. And for a team that plays negatively and as conservatively as England to win the World Cup, I think would affect football in a diminishing way across the club game. I think teams would go on from there and be like, oh, okay, so if they can win tournaments like that, then why don't we all just sit in and try and hit teams on the counter and win?
That's what everybody does anyway. It wouldn't take winning a World Cup for everyone to do that.
What did France do in the last World Cup? What did Italy do in the Euros?
Three
teams win a tournament.
How many goals did France score in the last World Cup?
We'll score loads of goals.
Not that many.
Will you?
Yeah. And France didn't score that many goals, by the way. There's one game, I think, where they scored. We're a good team. Like, you're talking about us. Like, you're trying to play us down a bit here. Like,
I'm not.
You're saying we're going to shit ourselves our way through a tournament.
How you're going to play. Like,
no, it's not.
We will be reactive and we'll be cautious. I think the point you just made about the World Cup winners influencing football was true about 12 years ago, but I'm not sure it's true anymore.
Okay. All right. Well,
I think you
look through the history of the game.
Yeah, the key is history. Massive. The key word is history.
Okay, so, but history influences the present. I think that's massive.
No, but we've got bigger figures that are influencing football more firmly nowadays, like Pep Guardiola and club-level managers. Because, yes, the World Cup used to be the pinnacle of football. It used to be where the best play. That's no longer the case. the case. The point is the Champions League is now where the absolute best play.
That's fine, but it's still the most watched tournament on earth. It's still the one with the biggest prestige.
And, I'm with you on it being most watched, but that doesn't... I mean, every coach in football watches the Champions League football final. Every coach in football watches the World Cup final. Like, it's not a greater degree of people with coaching knowledge that are what, like, that's not the, it's not really how it works for the influence. I do think that we're beyond that point now. England would not ruin football for the next 10 years because Pep Guardiola still exists in England.
Next 4 years. Hang on, someone else will win it in 4 years' time. It'll be fine.
At least you're saying we're going to win it, so that's good.
I said that England have a fair shot, which I don't think Sam got to. You know, I don't see a team who are exciting and good to watch here, but I do see a team that know how to play in tournament football.
Yeah, look, we're really good at tournament football. And the thing that will hold England back is that I don't think the team believe that they can ever win a final, depending on who they're up against. Like, that was the thing that you look at the last two upsets, like Croatia were technically superior and probably had a better mindset on the day in the semi-final, like despite England taking an early lead. The early goal from Trippier probably killed them in a way because it changed the game plan. And then against Italy, we went in at half time thinking we were, you know, kings of Europe, and then Italy were like, there's still a long way to go, and the mindset changes. And as soon as England have doubts in their mind, that's when our big problem always comes. Like, as soon as anyone in England, like, it doesn't matter whether you're doing a different job to football, we have a weak mentality as a nation and we can't deal with doubt. Okay, this is one thing that America, we'll talk about in a minute, they have it over us, is that Taylor was brought up to believe that she was the part of the greatest country in the world. Like, they are just taught to believe that they are the best no matter what they do. We are not brought up like that. We're not brought up like that. And it does affect everything that we do. It's been changing slowly in football. Like, we've got a great women's team now too. And in other sports, we've been doing well. You know, won the cricket the other day, I saw. But for this men's...
was glued to it, as you can imagine.
Yeah, I didn't see a second of it, but I saw we won it. I was like, well, that's good. I mean, at least we're winning stuff. but, you know, if we were to go up against Brazil or Argentina in the final, I would imagine they'd have a stronger mentality to believe they could win that game than probably we would, because we would be talking about, can we do it? Will it be the fast fail? And all those things will be on your mind when it comes to penalties, we'll miss one. That's probably the reason I'm most scared of the tournament, is that our self-doubt is actually our biggest opponent.
There's definitely a case for, like, so Alexis Guerreros and the Cooligans keeps telling me that England are going to get knocked out in the group stage because Wales really want to beat England, like, more than anything in the world. USA really want to beat England more than anything in the world. These are fixtures that these two teams are going to absolutely target and relish, and England won't be able to deal with it. And then, you know, you're going to get off to a slow start with Iran, and then it's going to spiral out from there. This is very, very much in board with what you were just talking about there, Dean, with the mentality. Reminds me of that stupid scene from Superstore where Glenn, the store manager, says, America is the best. And someone goes, what is America best at? And he goes, at being number one. And that's exactly. That's the mentality. And we're just like, we're the worst.
Well, let's go on to the Stars and Stripes.
Yeah, look, the thing is with the States, they don't like their coach. Nobody has any faith in him, right? So, like, as soon as the squad was announced across social media, the main reaction from everyone was like picking out players that they weren't happy that were called up, saying, can't wait till we flop so Bearhauter's out of a job.
Oh, like us. Like, that's what we did. Cool.
So, like,
that, I was going to say, that sounds familiar.
While there are reservations about Southgate for England, at least he's got a track record of actually doing well, and he's got a plan, even if it is a bit cagey and reactive, and he doesn't let our great players off the leash. At least he can do that if it comes to it. Like, Bearhauter has struggled to convince anyone he's capable of actually leading this team into a tournament, but at least he's done it. You know, he's come through the adversity and he's actually here. So maybe he feels like he's got nothing to lose at this point. He'll probably be out of a job either way, I'd imagine, after this one. But
well, not if they win it.
If they want to win the tournament. Yeah, not if they win the tournament. But yeah, look, they've obviously got a very European feel to their starting 11 now. And that's a big advantage to them. Like, they're producing very, very good players for huge clubs in Europe. And that just shows how far US soccer's evolved. And it's really impressive that they're being able to do that. And this group of players have come through together. They've got the youngest average age at the World Cup. It's about 24. And they haven't played at a World Cup. So on one, it's not going to be helpful, probably. I mean, it's good that they all know each other and they've come through other tournaments together and all this stuff. The togetherness is there. But there's no one in this squad with the experience to deal with a massive moment against England or a massive moment in the knockouts, whatever it is. And okay, they might be like, well, that's good because there's no past, there's no doubts in their head, no past pain that they're going to have. Yeah, no ghosts, exactly that. So that might help them. But then underlying that, you can put every single one of their players head to head with England's 11 and England are better in every single position.
No,
so
Tim Ream is actually better than Harry Maguire. I'm sorry.
I think Tim Ream is
better than Harry Maguire.
I think there's a case of Wales being better than the USA for a lot of those positions as well, like player for player. I'm not seeing the USA as on paper anything better than the third best team in this group here. Dean keeps telling me I'm wrong, but I'm really underwhelmed by the strength of their 11.
I've actually been harder on them there than I actually am in reality. Yeah,
like the central midfield three when fit is really good. I don't know about the rest of it outside of Pulisic. I don't see it.
They haven't got a goal scorer, right? They haven't got a goal scorer, and
they've put all the hopes, all the dreams lie on the shoulders of Jesus Ferreira, right?
Ferreira, and it's like he's got 7 goals from 15 games, and that's good.
It's not bad. Yeah,
it's good.
Not bad at all. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so like that. But that's what they're pinning it on. Like they're like, well, good so far. Let's hope for the best. I do like the I think Adams, Musa, McKennie. It's a great midfield three. If all three are fit, I genuinely think that is a major, major strength of this team, and I can't really doubt that. Pulisic, if he's fit and if he's on form, then yeah, he can make the difference. He's obviously going to have extra motivation here, and he's got the responsibility of the nation basically on his shoulders because he's the poster boy.
Brendan Aaronson, Gio Reyna.
And they got, honestly, I think their starting 11 is good. I really do. Like, of course, I'm going to say I expect England to beat them, but I think that this team can get through the group. I see, like, on socials, especially USMNT, like, accounts on Instagram, picking out, like, things that have been in the past said and written in England about the US and how the last time we played them at the World Cup, we were, like, quite detrimental and, like, it's just America, we make fun of them and stuff, makes fun of soccer or whatever. Like, that's not really going on anymore. So, like, if you think that, like, England are, like, completely, like, undermining you, thinking that you're clowns, like, that's not really the case. Like, of course we expect to win that game and we expect to win the group, but no one here is like, oh well, US, that's 4-5-0. Like, I'm not expecting that at all.
No, like, not again.
We couldn't score four goals in a game.
How much last time that happened?
It'd probably be 1-0.
Like, yeah, to the US. Okay. If the Hoover Dan is playing, Tim Ream and Cameron Carter-Vickers, then who's going to score? Who's going to score against that? My answer is nobody. US don't concede a goal in the group stages. Bold predictions out loud. If the Hoover Dan plays. But yeah, no, I think this is, it's interesting to see how this one pans out. And then move us on to Wales, because I think this side are very, very good. I'm really excited about how Wales play here. They're reactive and they are a counter-attacking side who will look to counter-punch heavily, who can sit in and soak up. And I think that Wales are very, very good at it. This is a team that's built on this mentality. They will be built around target men, players playing off them and off these two wing backs who will fly forward constantly. You look at the attacking core here and you look at Gareth Bale, obviously you look at Brennan Johnson, you look at Kiefer Moore. Now look, I've been very, very critical of Kiefer Moore on this podcast before, and I don't think he's the world's best player, but I think he's incredibly useful in this setup. What they ask him to do is to be a traditional focal point number 9 target man. And what we're seeing from him in this world setup is exactly that. And if you have players like Brennan Johnson, like Nico Williams, like Connor Roberts, like Gareth Bale, who can put the ball in dangerous areas and Moore can peel off and attack a fullback at the back post, he is going to score goals. And if you add that to the fact that Johnson is a brilliant transitional player who's very, very good at skipping past his man and getting into space, if you add to that that Gareth Bale has incredible dead ball ability and also is still Gareth Bale. We saw that when he popped up in MLS Cup despite being on the pitch for about 6 minutes with 10 men to score an equaliser in the last minute. that this side can cause damage. And I think that the way that they play, especially against England, will suit this group. I think the fact that they're reactive and fast on the break, I think the fact that they will look to get wide and attack those spaces with the wing backs is going to make it very, very difficult to beat Wales. And I think that everybody is susceptible to sucker punches from them. Now, we could probably say something similar for Iran in terms of how they look to soak up pressure. But I think Wales are better at it. And the fact that they have got into the top tier of the Nations League and stayed there, the fact that they have been a threat at the last two major tournaments that they've been at, you know, obviously Euro 2016 and then Euro 2021, they've been very good in both. I'm here to look at this Wales side and go, yeah, I think that they are going to cause real problems. I think they're going to bloody some noses, if I'm honest, about how they're going to set up. And I fancy Wales to cause a shock here. I mean, we'll get to it with the predictions, but I really fancy Wales to cause a shock.
Did you just say that Wales were very good at the Euros?
What, the last Euros?
They were awful, absolutely shocking at the Euros. They managed to climb out of the group, but they were like one of the worst teams to watch, like in terms of the synchronicity.
Yeah. Hang on. I'm not talking about in terms of being good to watch. I'm talking about they've overperformed expectations.
No,
in the last
me,
two
were,
tournaments gone.
They were very good at Euro 2016, of course, but in the last Euros, they actually played really badly and managed to scrape their, I don't know how they did it, but in terms of like actual team setups, they were atrocious. They were one of the worst teams I watched. I could not have been less impressed with Wales. I remember saying it at the time as well. You have to promise me that they're going to be better than that, because that was tragically bad.
I think they're a very good side. I think they're a very good side, very well managed, and they know what they're doing. There was a lot of chaos before that tournament with the turnaround, given the fact that it was all up in the air. I think they did really well to get to where they got to. I think they overperformed the expectations going into the tournament twice. And I think that we're seeing them now as a more cohesive unit that have an attacking brand that they know how to use, not an attacking brand full stop. They're a defensive team. Let's just make that clear. But that they know how to utilize that with their flick ons, with Kiefer Moore, with that big number nine profile in there. And I think that Wales are going to be a little bit of a dark horse in this group. Let's put it that way.
I don't think they're a dark horse. I think they're the second best team. They're better than the USA. Okay. I think they'll finish second.
Yeah, I think they'll finish top.
I think they're going to be horrid to play against. Like, I hate the idea of having to deal with Kiefer Moore. He elbows you, he jostles you, he wins headers from corners. They've got you know Bale's set piece delivery. They've got Sorba Thomas's set piece delivery as well to call upon if they want it. Like it's going to be really uncomfortable to play against Wales. And yeah. I never enjoy that fixture whatsoever. I'd still back us to win the group, but I think Wales are going to finish second.
Yeah, I'll just quickly gloss over Iran, who are also in this group, and people won't be giving them a chance. I mean, they've got a bit of a golden generation at Iran, and this is basically them in their prime. It's probably their last chance to actually do something. It's their fifth appearance in the last seven World Cups, which is pretty good record. Carlos Queiroz is back at the helm. He's come back in to take charge. And look, someone like experienced like that as a tactician, like he's got to help them. The last coach had serious problems during qualification stuff, like literally falling out with key players. Like it was not a harmonious squad at all. So yeah, look, Iran, they'll use two up top. I spoke to someone who covers Iran, and I said, like, what do we expect of this team? And he said, there'll be two different approaches. Like against England, they'll just try to soak things up and play on the break if they can, but ultimately try and get a draw. And if they can't, then a narrow defeat. And then in the games against Wales and USA, they'll actually try to get something out of those games. And basically they'll send crosses into the box and hope that they can rely on their strikers. They've got Mehdi Taremi, who's obviously a great forward for FC Porto. He's very good, and Sardar Azmoun is fit as well, which is obviously very, very important for this team. So they're not terrible. They'll probably like narrowly lose games, I would imagine. But
this group is not going to be great fun to watch. I think it's probably the key element. There's no
not
side
for you,
in here.
We'll be battering everyone, mate.
Oh yeah, but there's no side in here that's going to step on and take it to people. It's all just like, oh, we're all very reactive. We're all very, you know. I think there's going to be a lot of 1-0s and 0-0s in this group. That's how I'm looking at it. Now, obviously, yeah. It's the World Cup. Yeah. I could be completely out. But in terms of how teams have played so far, and especially considering that at tournament football, everyone tends to be a little bit cagier than they normally would be, this is one of those teams, one of those groups, I think, this might not be the most entertaining group in the world.
I'd agree with that for sure.
Right, let's get 100%. A couple of predictions in then, Sam.
England, Wales.
Dean?
England, USA.
I'm going to go Wales, England.
You got two wrong so far, Jack. We've only had two groups.
Yeah, well, that's it. My predictions are famously really good. I just think the Wales are going to call.
You think
they're
Wales
gonna
are
going to
finish above England?
Yeah, I do, yeah. I think England are going to fail to win one of their games. I think they're going to just like draw 0-0 with one of Iran or the USA. And then we'll see how it goes from there. Right, let's go on to Group C, where things thankfully get a little bit more exciting. So I'm going to take us on to Argentina, who are my favourites to win this tournament. Look, it's loads of fun at the moment with La Scaloneta, as they've been nicknamed in their home country. It's like a little bus that everyone's on. Scaloni was thrown in kind of accidentally, to be perfectly honest with you, after Sampaoli was relieved of his duties after the last World Cup and the mess that that was. They basically put Scaloni in because they didn't have any money, but it's really worked, and they're currently on the longest unbeaten run in international football. They won their first major tournament when they lifted the 2021 Copa America for 28 years. It had been since Argentina had lifted silverware. And look, I think that what we've seen here is giving a manager time to mould a squad and mould a team that are more than the sum of their parts. And that's it, right? For the first time in ages, I think Scaloni has basically done what everyone else has failed to do, which is get the best out of Lionel Messi without making him the single dangerous player in this team. For so long, it felt like Argentina were like, I'll just give Messi the ball and he might do something. And with this team, it feels like it's still, right, get Messi in the best possible positions. But if they triple mark him, we'll kill you elsewhere. And that's, I think, really, really nice to see, because at the last World Cup, it looked like he had the weight of the world on his shoulders. And it was, you know, that missed penalty, Dean. I mean, you were in the stadium for that penalty. And the pressure and the whole like, oh, God, if this doesn't go in, yeah, it could be curtains. And look, ultimately it was, because if they'd won that group, they wouldn't have faced France in the round of 16. They probably would have had a far better shot at trying to qualify. And actually, this time round, I think it just feels like Argentina have this kind of ability to suffocate opponents into submission. And this 4-3-3, which has Lautaro or Julian Alvarez, who's brilliant, and what an option to have off the bench, in the front line, obviously, Angel Di Maria is probably going to play on the left-hand side, but if not, Nico Gonzalez can play there, Papu Gomez can play there. There's a lot more ability across the team. The midfield three, one of them will be a holding number six. It's either going to be Guido, who plays at Real Betis, or Leandro Paredes at Juventus. And then he'll play two attacking number eights. Now, Sam and I discussed on Monday's podcast the fact that Gio Lo Celso is out is a problem for Argentina, because there's no one that does quite what he does as the other number eight. But I have faith in them to work it out. They play really nice, fluid possession football where they create overloads all the way through from playing out from the back to trying to break down low blocks and teams who sit in against them. And they're really, really good in transition as well. So what we're looking at here is a team in glorious form who have a really lovely style of play to watch and who have the depth options now to really make a go of this, I think. And I have almost all faith that Argentina are going to be semi-finalists at the very least.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, lots of variants can come into play, but they're definitely going to win this group. Like, they're very good. I have no additional notes. They're going to win this group. They're probably going to get 9 points.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see anyone holding them up in this group. I mean, you see Mexico and Poland, the two next sides in there, if you will, and then Saudi Arabia are the kind of wild card at the bottom. But let's come on that kind of scrap for second between Mexico and Poland before I bring us back to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I mean, Mexico, they just don't seem to have much feel-good factor around them at the moment. And, you know, I've spoken to a couple of our patrons who following this team, and they don't really know what to expect. They ultimately aren't sure that this is going to go particularly well. They just constantly talk about this team being inconsistent in recent times in every sense, whether it's the way that they play, whether it's the results that they get. Obviously, like, a lot of the time it's about finding Irving Lozano in the wide areas, and that's where they will look to have joy. The good thing for them on the other flank is that they're going to have Alexis Vega, who could have a real breakout tournament too. Like, he's a player that I've got down to watch in this tournament. He's creative, he's quick, he's got something special about him, and he is another one of those players that could break through. And Mexico really need a spark, it seems like, at the moment. They really just need something to happen. Now, their main aim just has to be to get out of the group, and like, they're obviously going to be contenders to do that. I don't know, man. They do usually make it to the last 16.
And no further.
That's
the fifth game, yeah.
That's their thing. So I'm probably going to give them the edge here and say they'll make it out of the group, but there doesn't seem to be that much expectation maybe as there usually would be for a Mexico team.
Yeah, and that's where Poland step in as, like, probably, like, you know, the favorites for second spot, but they're also trying to defeat their own kind of inner demons to a point as well. I mean, they haven't actually made it to the knockouts of a World Cup since 1986, and they've qualified for a fair few editions between then and now, which means that they are kind of fighting against their own history, and there's a real like lust in the country. Like, we need to make it to this fourth game. Like, we've got to get there. It's becoming a bit of a thing.
Yeah, Mexico have a fifth game curse. Poland have a fourth game curse.
Yeah, exactly. One step back. And also Lewandowski just doesn't really have a great record in tournaments. I know that it's really hard to score in major tournaments, and I don't necessarily hold it all against him, but he only has 5 goals in World Cup finals and Euros finals combined. It's just not very many. And that includes a home Euros as well, like a joint home Euros in 2012. He's been a top player the entire time, basically, about a decade or so since he moved to Borussia Dortmund and became one of the world's best strikers. And he just hasn't really been able to deliver. Now, it's not all on him, obviously. Poland have not necessarily had elite creators to supplement him and things like that. But, you know, one of those things that you probably usually bank on going into a tournament, like, oh, yeah, they've got an elite number 9, they'll score the goals, hasn't necessarily come true. So Poland need to get over their own thing with regard to the game four. They need to get Lewandowski rolling. And I guess they've got Zielinski at Napoli, who's having a great season. They've got Szymanski at Feyenoord, who's having a great season. And they've got two really good wingbacks, Matty Cash and Nikola Zalewski from Roma. Like, they've got the ammunition. Like, let's see it come through. I think with Mexico in relative turmoil, if it's the right word to say, but they definitely don't feel like a together camp, a happy camp, and Saudi Arabia being clearly the fourth best team in this group, it's there for Poland. It's absolutely there for them if they can take it. And I actually really hope they do, because going without the knockout stages for that long, that's not nice. That's tough.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. I mean, just coming on to Saudi Arabia, they will fancy their chances of causing a little bit of a shock here. Now, look, I don't think anyone is sitting there thinking that they're going to beat Argentina, but I think they'll look at that Mexico team in a bit of turmoil, as you say, and they'll look at this Poland side and go, right, well, they haven't got a great record. It's in a familiar climate in a neighbouring country, this World Cup. They had a really, really good qualification campaign. Look, recent results haven't been very good. Let's be perfectly honest with you. But they're another one of these sides that will look not to concede. They'll look to play one on the counter through the wings. They have two very, very good, very fast wingers in Salem Al-Darsari and Fahd Al-Mawalad. And they are rapid, like proper rapid. But both also have that composure in front of goal and that ability to work in small spaces as well. I mean, that's where the threat comes from. They have three very good players, those two and Salman Al-Farrash, who's the captain and kind of talisman. He plays in defensive midfield, and he's the one that looks to kind of turn defense into attack in transition for Saudi Arabia. They've been very good.
I remember him from 2018, actually.
Yeah, he was good. And he'll be good again here, I think. It's not the best team in the world, as you say. They are, on paper, by far the worst team in this group. But the way they play, I think, gives them a chance. And the way that they'll set up and look to just sort of sit in, they're very, very, you know, they're very determined to get back when they lose the ball. Is one of those sides. They're a little bit like Ecuador, Sam, is probably the comparison I'd use. They lose it and they're like, right, shape. And I think that what teams will struggle with, you know, maybe Argentina aside, is finding spaces behind them. Now, there have been mistakes in recent games and there have been defensive errors that we've seen, but they tend to cope and they don't tend to concede many goals. And I think that combined with, you know, the fact that it's a local climate and the fact that there'll be a lot of travelling fans supporting them and the fact that they're good at set pieces, maybe gives them, you know, a shot. This isn't a snowball's chance in hell, is probably how I'd phrase it. They have a shot of causing an upset, although I still think it's a long shot.
Yeah, big long shot. Absolutely. I'll take Argentina in first with 9 points. Now, I think Poland come out of this in second place and they play their fourth game.
Dean?
I'm going to go for Mexico just because I want them to. Like, Sam's being far more logical than me, and there's no doubt here. But I just want Mexico's vibes to turn better and that they can help them through.
No, I can imagine.
A good Mexico team is really crucial to a good World Cup.
It's a joy,
isn't it? It's one of the core ingredients. It's like garlic or onion in any sauce.
Yeah, I'd agree. But I am going to go with you, Sam. I'm going to go Argentina and Poland on this one. And with that, let's come on to Group D, which has France, Denmark, Australia and Tunisia. Dean, are France vulnerable?
Well, they are in the centre of midfield because they ain't got their best players there. No Kante and Pogba is a problem. Now, when I tipped them to win the last World Cup, I just looked at it and I was like, I just don't see a weakness in this team. They've just got everything. They've got depth. They've got stars in every position. They've got backups in every position. They've got experience. They've got some players looking to make a name for themselves. And they did. They had everything. And they've still got a lot of it. But in Tchouaméni and Camavinga, they've got two very young and inexperienced players to step in. If they even play, it might be that Rabiot plays or whoever. So whoever's there is not the same for France as Pogba and Kante are when they play for France. And that's what makes them vulnerable. On top of the fact that Deschamps obviously just likes to mess around sometimes and tinker with things. And there'll be some, I'm sure, some in-house fighting at some point in the France camp. There's
Adrien Rabiot's mum will turn up at some point.
Yeah, so there's good. Always some little subplot to any major tournament. But there's no doubt that they're obviously expecting to go. They're going there to win it. And that's just how the mentality that they have. Again, like, they're different to England because they do have that expectation to win rather than that hope to win. And that is a difference maker. Like, that is what separates the very good from the absolute elite. I think that France do have that. And obviously, like, Mbappe, they've got possibly the best player, best young player certainly in the world right now. He could be anything he wants at this tournament if things go for him. So they've got a really good squad. And then even in backup, like, you think, okay, so they've got Benzema back in the fold now. They've got Mbappe. They've got Griezmann. And they've still got Olivier Giroud. And Giroud probably going to be a key player at this World Cup because he might not be a guaranteed starter, but he'll probably figure in most matches. And what a player to have to come on. We've seen, like, even at Milan at 36 years old, still so important. He's close to getting a scoring record for France as well. So he's got extra motivation coming into this. They were undefeated in qualification. They only conceded 3 goals in qualification. They're obviously one of the favourites to win it if they can just keep their heads, to be honest. And if in the centre of the park, they do have two players that can step up and make sure that they can control matches. Mm. That's probably going to be the key. Can they find people that can control? Because they've got to find that balance between the attack and the defence, and that's going to be key.
Yeah, it's interesting that you talk it through. It's easy to get caught up in the weeds, isn't it? Like, oh, Kante's out, Pogba's out, Varane hasn't played a game for a month or so. They've got injuries. Luca Hernandez is only managed to just come back. It's really easy to get caught up in all of that. And then you just remember, oh, and also obviously they're cursed because the World Cup winners always go out in the group stage in the following edition. But then you're like, well, actually they've got Benzema and Mbappe and Griezmann, and Griezmann's back in great form. And it's like,
yeah, and Nkunku and Giroud and Marcus Toure, if those lads don't perform for whatever reason, yeah, and Kings Teo and Coman, and Ousmane Dembele,
they've got so much ammunition. And you know, this is a team that, as Dean just said, like, you know, the defensive record was very, very strong. And one thing we've always said about France is they've got like a billion centre backs to choose from, and they're all excellent. So like, how far do you sway? And like 50% of me is convinced they're going to flop, but the other 50% of me thinks they're going to win the tournament. How does that work? It doesn't. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever, but this is kind of what the tournament setup does to you, right? It's the way it kind of sets it up. Anything can happen at this World Cup. You never know if it's going to be the strength or the weakness that's going to tell, and it's going to be exploited or is going to go. And I find France incredibly hard to gauge. Really, really difficult.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I want to talk about Denmark, who obviously were the feel-good story of Euro 2020. After Christian Eriksen's cardiac arrest, they rallied around him. They got that unbelievable win over Russia at Parken. And it was just one of those stories that brought football together, I think. And since then, it's been going well. And actually, the thing that interests me is that less than a month ago, Denmark beat France 2-0 in a Nations League game. Now, it wasn't a full-strength France side, let's be clear. But there was a lot of players playing this. Mbappe played, Griezmann played, Giroud started up front in that one. Mondi, Camavinga, Tchouameni, Pavard, Saliba, Upamecano, Badiashile. So, you know, there was a couple of probably rotated pieces into centre-back, and Giroud started ahead of Benzema. But on the whole, very good France side that they came up against. And Christian Eriksen absolutely ran the game. And this side, I think, feel comfortable and confident in one of those games where like people are like, oh, they'll never win that group because France are in it. They're like, all right, come on then. And I think that Denmark have a very, very good chance of winning this group. And you look at this team, and we've obviously talked about Joachim Mähler, who dominates that left-hand flank and did so at the last Euros. He scored another 5 in qualifying. In this for this tournament, they've brought in Skov Olsen, who's having a really good season. He got 5 in there as well. And then, you know, Damsgaard, who hasn't really made an impression for Brentford just yet, but we know is a very, very good player. They have Andreas Christensen and Joachim Andersen as a first choice centre back pairing. Simon Kjær still kicking about, but he hasn't quite broken in back in since his injury. Rasmus Christensen has been playing really, really well for Leeds. It's a really good side, like kind of across the board. And then you have Højbjerg and Delaney in the middle, the old war horses who know exactly what they're doing. The only real question mark for Denmark is who scores the goals. And Kasper Dolberg's mostly been given the nod through the middle. He's kind of failed to get going since his move to Sevilla. And he's had bright spells in his career. Obviously, that first spell at Ajax was excellent. And then he went off to France, and his first season was really good there, and then he fell away again, and now he's ended up in Seville. But I think that, you know, you look at a player like Dolberg and you think, is he going to be one who can step up for his country in these situations? You know, we talked about Memphis doing it, we've talked about the South American players doing it as well. Is Dolberg someone who can go, right, it doesn't matter that I'm not playing all that much for my club, can I step up for my country? Because the rest of this side is so good, and they will create for him. If you can put a couple of those chances away, suddenly Denmark look like they're in business. And I think that with all the, you know, narrative surrounding this, with the return of Christian Eriksen to the biggest stage in football, I think there's a really good chance that Denmark can repeat that feat from September and beat France atop this group. Because generally I feel that they're a more cohesive side. There's no in-house fighting. There's no massive injury layoffs that we're worried about for the Danes. You just kind of look at it and go, why not? And I do think they'll be looking at it and thinking that as well.
Yeah, I mean, the number 9 situation for Denmark is a little bit underwhelming, but I'm actually just not convinced that matters that much. we've talked
not
about.
Not when Mailer keeps scoring five goals for the crack.
Yeah, when you've got Skov Olsen and Mailer and then you've got guys like, yeah, even like Pierre-Emil Højbjerg has been in unbelievable goal scoring form recently. Eriksen can obviously shoulder the load. Thomas Delaney and a couple of others are excellent from set pieces. Ultimately, tournaments, you know, you don't live or die by your number nine in a tournament, really. Michael Cox has just done a big piece in The Athletic about like how to win a tournament, and he's deduced that correctly that, you know, it's not essential to have a number nine. I mean, you only have to look at Spain, you know, back in 2010, who won most games 1-0, and they really struggled for like an absolute bona fide goal scorer. So it's not like a crippling issue that it would be maybe if you're trying to survive 38 games in the Premier League. If you don't have goals there, if you don't have a number nine, you are in trouble. It's not the case here at tournaments. Small sample size, set pieces, goals for midfield, wing backs. That's ultimately where you can gain the advantage and you can get through. And like, I'm kind of with you. Like, I just love the Denmark setup. I love the tactical philosophy that they have. I love the flexibility, but I love the aggression. I also think they're going to win the group. Go to Dean.
Well, I mean, let's just talk quickly before we do the predictions about the other two sides in here. Australia and Tunisia. This is the group, I think, for most people where it looks pretty clear cut, or the most clear cut, if you will, who the two teams qualifying are going to be. Dean, a word on Tunisia?
They're just not very good, I'm afraid. Expectations are extremely low. They qualified in the playoffs against Mali, it's a two-legged affair. It's pretty much the best draw they could have got. They won the away leg 1-0. It was an own goal, and they drew the second leg at home 0-0. In the Africa Cup of Nations, they made it to the quarterfinals by losing more games than they actually won. Not much about them. Like, they're just really coming here in hope more than expectations. They might score a couple of goals. If they do, it'll probably be Wahbi Khazri. Most people have probably heard of him. He plays for Montpellier at the moment. They don't really have much about them, to be honest, and they might be one of the whipping boys.
Yeah, and Australia, I don't think I have any more pleasant words to say about Australia, sadly. Apologies to Mitch Wiley, but it's not a good team. The fans hate the coach. They hate the style of play. They've got a couple of injuries have kind of maybe destabilized them a little bit, but Australia don't really have any goals anywhere. You know, it's not just about the fact that the number nine doesn't score. They just don't really do it. And one of my favorite stats is that, you know, during the actual initial phases of qualifying, over in the AFC, Harry Soutar, who is a gigantic center back for Stoke City, he scored 6 goals in 10 appearances from set pieces against like Chinese Taipei and Jordan. And like, obviously that doesn't work when you start to play like real football teams, and then you need to find other solutions, and they just don't really have any. They have a good player that plays for Hellas Verona, Aydin Hrustić, who's just about fit for the tournament, just about. And it was pretty touch and go, but he's okay. But it's not a particularly inspiring tale, Australia. The football won't be good. The quality isn't quite there, and then there's nothing from the technical area, from the managerial box that's really lifting them above their potential level.
They do have Jason Cummings though, and when Jason Cummings is in town, you know, everything is better. Everything is better. What a player!
That is true. He's not just a meme. He's also a footballer. They do have a potential breakout star in Garang Kuol, who's just signed for Newcastle. I don't think he's even started an A-League game yet. He keeps coming off the bench and scoring braces, though. He will be interesting to watch for the last 20 minutes, so watch out for him. But ultimately, Australia will not inspire in the same way that Tunisia do not. And like, I mean, I don't know what the odds are for, you know, the France-Denmark double qualification here, but they should be in, like, it's... You could put multiple houses on this and it will come. Like, there's just no threat.
But what about the curse, Sam? What about the curse? You can't be putting multiple houses on a cursed team.
Oh, that's
it's
true,
unfair.
Actually. Yeah, that's true.
Take that back. Right. That just leaves us with the predictions for the group. Sam, which way are you going?
Yeah, go to Dean first. See what he says.
Dean?
Well, I just think France have got more goal power, so they'll probably win it on the fact of scoring more goals.
They'll draw that game and it'll just go down to goal difference.
They'll draw with Denmark and then it'll be down to who scored the most goals than the others. So I'm going to back France to win it in Denmark second.
Okay. Sam?
It's quite good logic.
It is good
logic. Go with that. I'll go with that.
I'm gonna put the Danes top. I think the Danes win it.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah,
that's
I think fair. It's a reasonable assumption. For once here, I'm making a reasonable assumption.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with that one.
Call. Well, with that, I think we're going to call this part of the podcast to an end. Part one, groups A to D finish. You can skip over to part two where we cover groups E to H. All that's left for me to do right now is say thank you very much to the rank god, Mr. Sam Tai.
Cheers, mates.
Thank you very much to our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
Having Jack Collins, Knave of Hearts. Second part is live now, so head over there to listen to that one. Take it easy, gang. Peace.
Gotta walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer practice, then there goes the extra time for a jog. That's okay. Maybe next week.
When everyone else relies on you, it's easy to put your needs last. Therapy is a dedicated time to focus on what you need to be happy, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. BetterHelp offers convenient online therapy on your schedule. It's the same professional service you'd get from an in-person therapist, but with the option to communicate when and how you want, by chat, phone, or video call. Go to their site and fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away!
Throw our last Crunch Berry!
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries!
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch!
Are you struggling to lower your bad LDL cholesterol, even though you may be taking a statin, swapping steaks for salads, and exercising while listening to this podcast? Ask your doctor if Repatha Evolocumab is right for you. With Repatha, you can dramatically reduce bad cholesterol and the risk of another heart attack while enjoying life too, because you're human. And with convenient self-administration, you can take Repatha in the comfort of your own home. Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Repatha can cause serious allergic reactions. Signs include trouble breathing or swallowing, or swelling of the face. Most common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site. Visit Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA. Talk to your doctor today about Repatha.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.